Back to throw. In trouble. He's going to be sacked. No, gets away. He runs. Gets away again. Goes to the 40. Gets away again. To the 35. Cuts back at the 30. To the 20. The 15. The 10. He dives. Touchdown, 49ers.
Welcome to another episode of the No Huddle Podcast. I am Brian Rennick. I am joined by the legendary Al Sacco. And as you guys can tell, our third co-host, Zane Nackvi, is still missing, but for good reason. Zane and his wife had their baby on July 25th. Mom and baby are healthy. We are very excited for them. So Zane will be taking at least another week or two to gain his bearings as a father of two now, which I can attest is a change. It's definitely a change.
And, he's never going to have his bearings again.
That's true. That's fair. It's not that he's going to find his bearings. It's that he's going to adapt to not having it anymore.
Right? Yeah, there you go.
But like I said, Al and I are here. We are going to talk about the news coming out of camp. And then obviously the big news is the 49ers finally extended Deebo Samuel. And, you know, Al, you tweeted it out yesterday. There seems to be a pattern, and hopefully people remember this pattern as we look at the Nick Bosa extension talks next offseason. George Kittle got his extension late July. Fred Warner got his extension early August. And now Deebo Samuel got his extension on July 31st. You know what that is, guys? That's a pattern. So let's remember that. Let's remember that. As everyone freaks out about why Nick Bosa hasn't signed his extension next offseason. And just know that the team has really kind of established a pattern with these homegrown players that they extend, that they are going to do that. And they are going to break their players off, right? We now have one of the highest paid wide receivers, the highest paid left tackle, highest paid tight end, highest paid off-ball linebacker. Like, the 49ers are going to do what they can for their players, especially those homegrown players. And let's not freak out next offseason. Nick Bosa will be a 49er for a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there was some reason to be concerned, obviously, with the trade request, obviously. Right. But also, I think we still weren't quite sure where this team was with that because of what happened with Buckner. Right. So that's always in the back of people's minds. They did sign Warner. They did resign Kittle. But you still have that Buckner thing in the back of your mind. And this trade request happens. And this was, to me, something where I really wanted to see, okay, where are they going to go? Is this going to happen? And it did. And they gave him a very competitive extension, $73 million, 24 guaranteed at signing, 41 full guaranteed, 58 total guarantees, 3 years. And I want to talk about Deebo a little bit, the player, and kind of what this means. Okay. So you look back to his rookie year, I think he had about 805 yards receiving, which is a really solid year for a rookie wide receiver. But things started to happen. Oh, thank you, Chris. Things started to happen in the Super Bowl that I was really like, whoa, we could be on to something here with this guy. Because if you remember in the first half of the Super Bowl, Brian, they were just running those reverses with him and they couldn't stop it. They could not stop it. And in the end, they went away from that, which still drives me crazy. Don't get me started on the second half of the Super Bowl. I can go on forever with that. But you started to think, wow, this guy is, he had this great rookie season, but he is a problem. Then you fast forward to 2020. He was another one of their impact players that the Niners didn't have that year. He was banged up. But you look at the season he had last year, and the first thing you say is, okay, 1,405 yards, the most of any 49ers player other than T.O. or Jerry Rice. But that amount of receiving yards doesn't even tell the whole story. It doesn't even tell the whole story of how valuable he was. 14 total TDs. Only Rice, T.O., and Roger Craig have had more in 49ers history. But what he did to put the team on his back was amazing. And unless you watched him every single game and just some of the plays he made, I always talk about the play that he made at Chicago on just, it was just third and whatever. And it was a throw behind the line and they were just trying to get room to punt. And he takes it to the 1 yard line, changed the season around. Yeah. And he made a lot of plays like that. And in the playoffs that, you know, that you can't stop him, you know, and it seemed with Garoppolo, you know, I remember in 2021 game two, I think it was either against the Rams or the Patriots. I don't remember, but it was one of the games where Garoppolo was still banged up. And their offense was just throw Deebo a shovel pass, you know, and he's just so valuable just getting the ball in his hands. And he means so much more to the team in terms of just overall making that offense go. He put the team on his back. So this was essential for them, especially with a young player like Lance behind center, because he needs that help. you know, I like the contract. You're only given a 3-year extension, which puts him, I think at 29, will be a free agent again. So that gives Debo another chance for a big payday. And also, it kind of protects the Niners, right? You know, DJ Debo has had, you know, some injury stuff. So if it turns out that he is banged up or the way that they use him, there's not a long-term value there. You know, you're out of it in the next 3-4 years. So yeah, I thought it was a great contract for both sides. And I think it's huge for the team. I think it's huge for their morale. I think it's huge for the offense. And it was just, it was great to see them do that. And it, Lynch's words, that we mentioned Bosa, Lynch's words in the press conference that he had, it seems like it's probably not going to get done this year, but Bosa's a priority. He's like, he's not going anywhere. They're going to pay him. And now I believe it. Now they've shown me enough where I believe that they're going to keep this core group together with this regime. I think that they're going to do it. And look, the regime's made mistakes. All regimes do. Sure. I think one of the things we have to remember, Brian, with Lynch and Shanahan, they were new to this too, 5-6 years ago. Right. So they were going through growing pains and they were figuring it out. But I think for the most part, they've still made mistakes and they still will. And I think they may have made one we'll get into later, but for the most part, they've been really good and they've kept their core players. No team is perfect. And I think they've done a good job now. And they've given us enough proof that, yes, they are in it to win it, and they're going to keep the core guys. They're going to reward them.
Yeah, you know, you brought up Buckner, and I the one thing I do want to point out is Buckner was drafted by the previous regime. So if you look at all the superstars that this regime has drafted, they have extended them, right? Kittle, and then Warner, and now Debo, and then it'll be Bosa next year. And so they are committed for sure to preserving the core that they have put together. And, you know, we, like you said, they have made mistakes, and arguably you look at that first draft, you know, they had the 3rd overall pick. They ended up with Solomon Thomas. I mean, they had the 2nd overall pick and then traded back one. They fleeced them in that trade. That was probably the biggest win in that entire draft. Outside of obviously getting George Kittle in the 5th round, but that was also their first, you know, their first draft. Right. And, you know, like you said, Lynch was inexperienced. That's why they brought in Martin Mayhew. That's why, you know, John Elway essentially did his buddy a favor and allowed Adam Peters to come over, you know, and Adam Peters is that personnel guy. He is that scout, that head scout, if you will, the talent evaluator. And so, I think they have done enough. I think they've done enough for fans to be able to say, look, I am confident that these players that I love are going to stay with this team, you know, maybe not necessarily long term. Like you said, that Debo contract is 3 years. And honestly, I think that's a win-win. And to me, this is one of the first times where it doesn't necessarily look like the 49ers appreciably came out on top, which is fine with me. I have no problem with that. You know, they have a reputation for being kind of, you know, hard bargainers, if you will. Parag Marate, you know, always tries to put the team first. And honestly, that might be what that 3-year deal is. And we don't know, you know, we have no idea what the back and forth was. We really are probably never going to know really what it was that Debo, you know, caused Debo to ask for a trade. Honestly, it just all feels like bargaining at this point. And it just, that seems to be the easy answer. But 3 years is a win-win for both sides. You get Debo through his prime, and then as an organization, if it looks like he's slowing down, you can let someone else pay him, and then you can move on, right? You've got Ayuk, who's going to get an extension, more than likely. You know, Matt Barrows tweeted out today or wrote his camp article today saying that Brandon Ayuk is having essentially the same type of offseason that Debo Samuel had last year, which is obviously a good sign. And now you've got Debo back. And like you said, even before he started taking all those handoffs after the running back room just got decimated, you know, he had over 1,000 yards receiving. And I think at that point he had 4 receiving touchdowns. And so, you know, he is a threat in the receiving game. I think Trey Lance is going to unlock him a little bit more, you know, especially down the field. The one thing that you think of with Debo, you know, Debo's fast, but he's almost more quick than fast, right? He's super, super burst, unbelievable burst. And, you know, you look at that handoff against Dallas in the playoffs when he gets around that right side and he starts and he almost stops, finds his hole, and then right when he gets to that second level, you can literally see it's like he has afterburners that he just activates, right? And then he's gone. And so, you know, I think we're going to see a lot more of him in the receiving game. But, you know, a lot of people were talking about maybe the hangup is maybe he doesn't want to be used as a running back. And it seems like it's not necessarily that he didn't want to be used as one. He just wanted to make sure that he was going to be compensated. And so the other details that came out is that he has incentives in his contract that can pay him an additional almost $2 million, $1.95 million over the life of the contract for rushing yards and rushing touchdowns. And what that looks like is $650,000 per year for each year he has 380 or more rushing yards, $150,000 if he scores 3 rushing touchdowns in any 1 year, and then he maxes out at $650,000 per year and $1.95 million over the life of the new contract. And so those that fear that he wasn't willing to run the ball anymore, the wide back is here to stay and he'll get compensated for it. But like Freddie here says, you know, that 3 years it's nice for both sides. If Debo plays through that contract and is still a superstar, then he hits the market at I think it's actually 30. I think he'll be 30 when that contract is over. And another team is likely going to be willing to sign him. And if the wear and tear is too much, then the 49ers are out of it after 3 years. So I'm thrilled with it. I'm thrilled to have Debo back. But for both sides, I'm thrilled for Debo to get his deal. You know, he has earned that. And I'm thrilled for the 49ers because it sets them up to be in a really nice position with, you know, arguably the last year of a cheap Trey Lance, if Trey Lance is what we think he's going to be.
Yeah, and I almost wonder too. I mean, I think he's definitely going to run the ball, but it may be the way he runs the ball that I don't know if he's going to be running in between the tackles as much, because I think they're going to protect their $73 million investment. You know, I think they are. So I do think you're still going to see him on sweeps and shovel passes, and I think there will be that aspect to it, but I don't know how much he'll be going in between the tackles type thing. You know, we'll see on that. And Freddie, I wanted to get to your other question too about why the Niners don't set the market on things like this. Well, I think that the Niners usually want to do contracts the way they want to do them, right? Marathe has a way that he wants to structure these things and everything else. This one sort of looks like maybe went more player side and maybe they felt some pressure to do it. I do think another reason why they can maybe wait on some of these guys right now is players are in a good situation on the 49ers. It's a good team. Yep. If you're an offensive player, you want to play with Kyle Shanahan, right? I mean, that's the thing. We talked about Debo going to the Jets, and I know there's, you know, former 49er or, you know, part of the Shanahan tree there or whatever, but you're still, it's still
Shanahan
not,
light.
Yeah, exactly. It's Shanahan light. It's still not Kyle. So Samuel was better here too. And I'm sure Debo knew that somewhere in the back of his mind or in the front of his mind or wherever. But this was the best place for Debo. And I think with a lot of free agents, this is the best place for them now. This team looks good. This team looks like it does have to prove that it can get to the playoffs consistently and stay healthy. But I think if they do stay healthy, I think you're going to get a nice little run here where they're in the playoffs. I do want to say quickly too, if you're listening to this afterwards on the podcast and not on YouTube, you're going to hear me and Brian talk to random people and you're going to probably be like, who the hell are they talking to? Like, who the hell was Chris Al that you think in the beginning of the show? We're getting comments on here now as we're originally recording this on YouTube, and we're just going to interact with people. So if you're listening on the podcast, just deal with, I guess, random comments. I guess, sorry. We'll try to get better at it and make a little bit more sense. But it was a great week, whatever you want to call it, for the Niners getting him back in camp. Now there's a lot of excitement, right? And it seems like with that camp, Brian, there's a lot of excitement coming out of the reports and that sort of thing with it. And the big thing so far, I think, obviously, is Trey Lance, right? I know for me, every day, I want to know how Lance did. And I don't think you can really look at the numbers. Like, I think today, we're recording this on a Monday. He was 5 for 10, I think I saw.
That's what I saw reported, yeah.
But I also saw, you know, you can't look at these numbers because he played better than that, because he's getting harassed because he's got to make plays, you know, running around, and he's making good throws and things like that. And he's had some bad days. And he's had some good days. And I think you mentioned this to me off the air. We'll know when they have those joint practices a little bit more with the Vikings, right? How he does and that sort of thing. But right now, I'm excited. He's playing against one of the best defenses in the NFL, if not the best defense in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Certainly maybe the best defensive front. So for him to go up against this defense, it's only going to maybe get a little bit easier, right? So you want him to throw him into the snake's den, throw him into it, see how he does. But I'm happy so far. This is his team. Let him go over these bumps in practice. Let him make these mistakes in practice. Let him have Nick Bosa chasing him around. You know, let him have this secondary that's glued to his receivers and see how he does. But so far, you have to be at least positive, I think, about what you've seen from this young quarterback and what he's going to be able to do as he grows.
Yeah, I think the big thing so far in terms of Trey Lance and his development, the obvious connection is there with him and Brandon Ayuk. It really does seem like the kind of relationship that Jimmy Garoppolo and George Kittle had off the field, it seems like Ayuk and Lance are really fostering that kind of relationship as well. I know they spent a lot of time together in the offseason. Kyle Shanahan talked about how Ayuk and Lance spent a lot of time together in Southern California. At one point, they ended up at Shanahan's house. And from there, they, according to Shanahan, they both swam in the ocean for the first time in their lives, which is a pretty cool, pretty cool thing, right? Brandon Ayuk from Reno, Nevada. Obviously, that is not a not anywhere near a coastline. And then Trey Lance from the Great White North of Minnesota, right? So, just a cool relationship that's building. I remember Lance posted a Instagram story where he took a picture of Ayuk, who was wearing like all brown, right, and sitting on a couch or whatever, and he called him his little milk dud, which I thought was hysterical. So the connection is there, and obviously now getting Debo, they can start working on that connection as well, but a lot of the highlight plays so far have been made by Ayuk in the passing game. Again, Lance has had some rough days. You know, a lot of days where you'll see like a 5 of 10, like today, 6 of 11. But there's also context behind those numbers. They're not just, it's not like he's sailing passes or anything like that. Those are passes that are dropped by receivers. There's passes that are broken up because of sticky coverage, like you said. And, you know, again, he's going against one of the better defensive fronts in all of football with an offensive line that is still currently trying to figure things out, right? Especially on that interior. They are alternating Jake Brendel and Dan Brunskill with the ones. I have seen really good reports on Aaron Banks, especially in pass protection, which is obviously great news. It sounds like Spencer Burford has spent a lot of time at right guard, which is another kind of wrinkle that I don't even think we predicted necessarily going into this, because again, we thought it was Brendel kind of entrenched at center, and which meant Brunskill at right guard. I like Burford a lot. I liked him coming out of UTSA, fourth round pick, very athletic, very strong, very nasty, you know, fits the profile that the 49ers seem to like of their drafted offensive linemen. So yeah, again, he's going against, You cannot as a fan go, man, this 49ers defense is going to be number one in the league or a top three defense. And then with the same breath go, well, why is Trey Lance struggling in camp? Well, he's struggling in camp. He's going against the best defense he's probably going to face all season. So, you know, his performance in camp, it's not as important to me as seeing things like, hey, he's pushing the ball downfield more, right? He's taking more risks. We're seeing lots of routes that weren't necessarily, it's not that they weren't a part of the offense. They just weren't a part of what Jimmy Garoppolo was comfortable throwing. Lots of sideline routes, lots of out routes, lots of routes down the field. And so I don't think that the structure of the offense is going to change all that much. You know, Shanahan's offense essentially has, especially in the passing game, it's really routes that attack all three levels of the field. And it's just a matter of who is open and if the quarterback is willing to make that throw. And I remember hearing Nate Tice of Rob Tice's son, or not Rob Tice, what's his name? Mike Tice, thank you. My cousin was friends in childhood with a guy named Rob Tice. That's where that came from. Mike Tice. So Mike Tice's son, Nate, played quarterback at the University of Wisconsin. He's now a regular on Robert Mays's NFL or the Athletic NFL show. But that's what he talked about, that Trey Lance is going to unlock those deeper routes that were there already. They just weren't being exploited. And so, you know, ultimately, I think this offense is going to look very similar, because what Kyle Shanahan wants to do is he wants to run the ball and then he wants to get chunk plays in the passing game. And he now has a quarterback with an arm that can do that. And so that's what I like to see. That's what I like to hear, that he's pushing the ball down the field more. We're seeing lots of, you know, 30, 40, 35, 40, 45 yard passes, even from Nate Sudfeld and Brock Purdy to a lesser extent. So it seems like the quarterbacks are really, really trying to hammer those deeper routes and challenge themselves. And that's what I like to hear.
Yeah, that's going to be the difference this year, is Lance pushing the ball. Do you remember in Kaepernick's first start against Chicago when he was making those second and third level throws that Alex Smith usually didn't? I think it was Vernon Davis who said after the game.
It's the same situation.
Yeah. Right, kind of, right? And it's like, yeah. Vernon Davis said something after the game about, you know, places where I usually don't expect to get the ball, it was just on me because it's those second and third level throws. And I love Alex Smith. But, you know, he's going to play very similar to Jimmy, I guess, really, like a lot of underneath stuff and checkdowns and that sort of thing. And all of a sudden Kaepernick's there and you're pushing the ball downfield and maybe it's 58% completion instead of 66% completion, but there's, you know, more big plays and that sort of thing. So I think that's what you can see this year too, is just those shots down the field. You know, Trey's going to take it, and with that will come some turnovers. Maybe you get some three and outs, you know, that sort of thing, but you're going to get more big plays. And you know what, if there's a few more big plays, the Niners may not need to score that much this year, to be honest with you. If they keep it in the low 20s, they might be able to win games. So, then you mentioned Ayuk too. Now, Ayuk last year had 96 yards through week seven. That's it.
Okay. Weird, yeah.
And then he finished with 732 over his last however many games from week eight on. So he was really good, really good after that. And he really came around for whatever doghouse he was in or whatever Shanahan had to get through to him or whatever it was. He persevered through it. He came out the other end. He had a really strong second part of his season. And now it looks like this year, it looks like he's ready to take that next step. So, Brian, if you have Ayuk ready to break out in year three, Debo being Debo, Kittle, even if he is taking a bit of a step back, and I'm not saying he has, but, you know, if he's not the Kittle of, you know, 3 years ago getting 1,400 yards. So just those three, again, it's so exciting, man. It really is. Like, all of a sudden you have. We thought this could be this way, but we haven't seen it yet. It's always sort of bits and pieces. Kittle's out. Debo was hurt. Yeah. Debo's playing great. Ayuk's in the doghouse. Now it seems like these three are ready to roll together. That's awesome. That is exciting. And that's where a lot of this excitement is coming from, I think. We haven't gotten the defense yet, really. Yeah. A lot of excitement is coming from with the Niners and what they can do.
I mean, like you said, last episode, Warren Sharp ranked this pass-catching core, right, which included Kittle, as number two in the NFL, right? Warren Sharp knows what he's talking about. That's not a guy that, you know, just throws hot takes out there for the sake of it. You know, there's a lot of thought and a lot of data behind that. And there are very few trios of pass catchers in the NFL that I would prefer to have right now than Kittle, Debo, and Ayuk. And then behind them, you've got Jennings, who broke out at the end, right? A possession receiver who just blocks his ass off, right? Some of my favorite clips of Jennings were, you know, just literally pissing off DBs to the point where they're like throwing punches at him because he's blocking all the way through the whistle and maybe to the, as they like to say, the echo of the whistle, if you will. And Shanahan has had nothing but great things to say about Ayuk this offseason, which again is fantastic to hear. And so it does seem like he turned a corner. And then once he turned that corner, just like you said, he took off. And so, you know, the other thing is, and somebody pointed this out on Twitter, and I'm not going to remember who it was right now, but when Trey Lance was at North Dakota State, if I'm not mistaken, his top pass catcher in terms of targets and catches was his tight end. So Trey knows how to find a tight end, and it played a big role in that passing offense. And Kittle can do the same. And Mina Kimes said like a month ago that she thinks that Trey Lance is going to unlock George Kittle. And I could see that. And you know, I don't foresee three guys getting over 1,000 yards, but I definitely could see two of them. Two of those three. And then the third is probably going to be close. And then you've got Jennings, who's, you know, going to have, you know, maybe close to 500 yards. But I think when we're going to see that and really see it just explode is probably the second half of the season. Once Trey gets a little bit more of his feet underneath him. But yeah, I am very excited about this offense. I mean, there's, I don't know why you wouldn't be.
I have one reason why.
Sure.
The one thing I would be lying to everyone right now if I said I wasn't really worried about this interior of the offensive line. Listen, I'm notably a pessimist. If you listen to this show, I could always find something to worry about. But listen, Trent Williams is Trent Williams. I think McGlinchey gets a bad rep. I think McGlinchey's decent, right? You know, starting right tackle in the league.
He's an elite run blocker at right tackle.
Usually terrific. And a decent pass blocker. Yeah, and I think with his pass blocking, I think he's had some rough moments and maybe had some bad times. And I think that gets a little bit magnified. But I think McGlinchey's a good player. I feel okay with him there. So you have two tackles that, okay, we're good to go. And then you go on the inside, and I am nervous. I know Aaron Banks looks good and everybody, but he's still his first year of real action. There have been some issues in pass protection from what I've kind of heard. We'll see how he does, especially when you're against Aaron Donald of the world and things like that, right?
Nobody's going against Aaron Donald, except Daniel Brunskill.
But he's maybe not so great against everybody else. He's good against Aaron Donald. Right. But then you have Brunskill and Brendel and Buford and whatever the hell is going on at the other guard position in center right now. I understand this competition. I kind of wish they just pick a freaking center and kind of let everybody else fill in where they're going to fill in so they can get used to playing together. Because I am nervous about it. Very nervous about it. I guess one thing that, knowing how important center is in Kyle Shanahan's offense, don't understand why they've done this. I don't understand why they're going in. They can like Brendel great. He's still 30 years old and hasn't really played. You know, Brunskill to me, Brunskill, I think, is a decent guard. He played really well at tackle that year, but he hasn't shown me anything at center that we're going to trust him to be a top-notch center. Not yet, anyway. Maybe he will. Maybe he will. You know, I'm not saying that he can or won't. But right now, that's what makes me nervous. That can derail Trey if you're constantly getting bull rushed up the middle. That can derail the running game, which is a staple of this offense, and we know they're going to run the hell out of the ball. But if we're getting blown up on the inside, that concerns me. That can be an issue. So other than that, it's like Niners camp. You're like, oh my God, this looks maybe the Super Bowl team. And last year, I didn't think they were. I was very, very upfront about that. I was like, I think the team's got problems. And they did at the beginning of the season. This year, I'm kind of, other than the media, I kind of think they're going to be really good. But what can derail them is the interior O-line. That I would be lying to everyone if I said right now that's like my antennas are up there. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, I agree with you. I didn't understand why center was not really addressed in the offseason. It seems like they were not caught off guard by Mac's retirement, which meant that they probably knew, you know, early on that the likelihood that he was going to retire was probably pretty high. You know, and when that happened with Joe Staley 2 years ago, they pulled off the trade and brought Trent Williams in. So the fact that they didn't do anything and then didn't address it in the draft. Now, to be fair, I think there were probably two guys in the draft that they were like, we would take them in a heartbeat. One was Linderbaum, who went in the first round, and the other one was Juergens, who was the center out of Nebraska. And I know that they, I don't know, but I have heard that they were really high on Juergens, and then Juergens ended up going early in the second round. And so, you know, I think ultimately to them, it was like, there's two guys that if they're there, like we would take them, but we're not going to force a selection. Oh, the other one being Donald Parham out of Memphis, who actually, I personally think the reason they ended up with Ty Davis Price was because Parham was selected by the Raiders, I believe, one or two selections prior to their third round pick where they took Ty Davis Price. And I think they would have taken Parham there as their future center. And so there were three guys that they were looking at, and they didn't end up being able to get one. Now, I think Donovan West, who hasn't been talked about a lot, I think he has an opportunity to be a center of the future. I don't think that future is the 2022 season. And so the scary thing is there's really not a whole lot that they can do to address the position. J.C. Treader is still available. Rohan, our boy wonder at 49ers Web Zone, who graduated from high school in June. He posted a graduation photo, and I legitimately thought that was his college graduation photo. And then he's like, I'm going to University of Wisconsin in the fall. I was like, wait, what? Like, he's been writing for us for like a year. So, but he tweeted out, and one thing he said, and I would agree with this, is, you know, one of the reasons Treader is still available is because, the rap on him currently, is that he cannot or does not practice. So he practiced almost, didn't practice at all last year with the Browns, still started all 16 games, still had a pretty high PFF grade. You know, he was there for the games, but he wasn't there for practice. Well, the problem with the 49ers is, I mean, it's the same Kubiak system, right? I think he could plug and play. I really do. I don't think it would be an issue for him. The problem is, if that's the case, unless you put Brunskill at right guard, you have Aaron Banks on the left of him and Burford on the right. And what Rohan said was, part of the issue that they're having right now is just like a communication issue. Just trying to figure out how to gel and play together, right? That interior offensive line really has to play as a unit. It's really the three of them. It's not three individual guys. It's three guys coming together and playing as one on the interior of the line. And so if Treader can't practice, and again, I don't know if the issue is even if he comes into a team this year, he still wouldn't be able to practice. I have no idea. But if that's the issue, that would probably be part of why they haven't really barked up that tree yet, is because that would be difficult for Banks and for Burford to gel with somebody who isn't practicing. Outside of Treader, there's really not a lot available. And, you know, you have the Bucks, who just lost their starting center for the year. Ryan Jensen went down with a knee injury, which means, which means that possibly they could be looking at Treader. But I also, I heard that they are pretty high on a guy that they drafted last year. And so it sounds like, you know, he's going to get the first crack. But I don't think there's a whole lot of time left for them to just kind of, you know, pussyfoot around with this position, because it can really, like you said, derail the entire season.
Yeah, and you mentioned this previous draft, but the draft 2 years ago too, you know, Alex Mack was a short-term solution, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of thought, you know, you have Mack, maybe they draft somebody. They took Banks, and Humphrey was there. That's something that really surprised me. And again, in the sense, because traditionally this team seems like they sort of de-emphasize guard a little bit, or maybe it's not as important as other positions for them. And I guess a lot of teams like that, but that they do emphasize, again, that center is an important position in Shanahan's offense, but they went guard maybe because they were just thinking, we're going to lose Lake and we're not going to be able to pay him. Yeah. But they also needed that center. So it's a little bit strange. And again, no team, you could look at every single team in the NFL and pick something apart, right? Or be like, sure, what the hell are they doing?
That's roster management, right?
Exactly, right? And I think every team, there's issues like that everywhere. Every fan base would pick somewhere, whether it's the Bucks or the Bills or, you know, any team like that. So there's some fan base, but what were they doing there? And that's just kind of what I feel with the Niners right now. And I hope it doesn't derail them. I still think they're going to be good enough even with it. I mean, I don't think it's going to blow their season up, but not talking about blowing up the season. I'm talking about, can they win a championship? Can they do that? Right. And it may hurt them there. So we'll see, but we'll see. You know, if that's the one thing, I guess, that we're a little bit worried about right now, that's not too bad. Right. And the one thing that,
arguably. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the one thing that I'm not worried about right now is this defense. Keep talking about it. And I think the biggest thing for me, you know, you never know with a free agent coming in, how they're going to react to a new place, or if they're going to feel pressure or whatever it is. And Tre'Davious Ward looks like he's fit right in, man. Excuse me. He just looks great so far in camp. He picking everything off, along with Emmanuel Mosley. This quarterback duo looks terrific. It's exciting. You know, you hear, Trey Lance got picked off, but you're kind of like, all right, it was Ward and Mosley again. All right, you know, cool. Like, this looks like it's really going well. So to bring that guy in there and to hear what you're hearing as far as what these guys look like at camp. And Richard Sherman tweeted too, like, he thinks that this is going to be one of the best secondaries in the league. Paraphrasing, he said something like that. There's starting to be a lot of hype. We knew the front seven.
Yeah.
This back end too, this defense, I'm telling you, it can be special this year.
Yeah. To me, the biggest victory of the offseason was the front office finally investing in the secondary. It felt like, you know, and they have a philosophy, right? And their philosophy is you build your defense from the front to the back, which means that you sink the majority of your resources into the front. And then, you know, you can figure out the back because, you know, the old adage, right? How anybody can cover for 3 seconds, right? And that's really what they're looking for, right? Because after 3 seconds, you know, the quarterback's on his back. Now they've got a secondary that can cover for more than 3 seconds and a front that can get to the quarterback in 3 seconds. And so it's like, what's an offense going to do, right? And I believe the stat right now is that they have, 14 interceptions through camp so far as a secondary. And that is Ward. That's Charvarius Ward, you know, the cornerback that they signed, which again was a signing that I pushed for even before it happened and was very excited about when it did. You know, I think he's a very underrated player. I think he's going to end up being a pretty, I would argue, a household name maybe by the end of this season, just because, again, this defense is going to be so good and the secondary. And another player who has impressed so far is Hufanga, which is good news, right? Because that was really the only hole that this defense had anywhere was who was going to start at strong safety or just other safety, right? It's really kind of interchangeable at this point on a 49ers defense. It really isn't a free safety and a strong safety. It's just the two safeties. Who's going to start opposite Jimmy Ward? Seems like Hufanga has been given the opportunity to start, and it seems like he's taking advantage of that. I believe I've seen tweeted that he is the first one on the practice field so far every day of camp. There have been days where he's been out on that field 45 minutes before practice starts, which is great. He was when the 49ers go into any draft, they have a designation that they call golden helmets, right? That they give to a handful of players. And those are players that not only, you know, look like they are good players, but they possess a lot of those intangibles, those leadership abilities. And Hufanga was a golden helmet guy for them. And so it seems like they really kind of scouted him early and were able to get him in the fifth round. And it seems like that really could be quite the pick for them. Even the linebackers have gotten in on the interceptions. I believe Fred Warner has at least two. Somebody said down here, why does no one speak of Greenlaw? I don't think it's not that Greenlaw doesn't deserve respect or doesn't get respect. It's just that, you know, the 49ers have what amounts to the best linebacking trio in the game. Fred is going to always get the accolades because he's the middle linebacker. He's really the captain of that defense. Sounds like he's even leaned into that even more this season. He's part of the reason why that defense plays like it does during practice. But yeah, that secondary, again, they haven't had, you know, I loved Richard Sherman, and I continue to love Richard Sherman. And that season he had in 2019 was really good. But also, if you look at what happened late in the season and in the playoffs, he got picked on a little bit. And what they realized was, you know, that speed and that recovery speed isn't there for him anymore. That's not an issue for Charvarius Ward. That is not an issue for Emmanuel Mosley. You've also got Verrett, who I think, honestly, will probably start the season on the PUP list or on the IR designated for return. And then could be like a midseason boost, if you will. Sounds like Diamador Lenore has looked good on the outside. That's probably going to be where he ends up, is the outside. Ambry Thomas had a rough start, but he's starting to come back. Denard has looked good in the slot. Womack has had his moments. So there is just a ton of depth in the secondary, which is great because, you know, we just spent a season with Josh Norman, thank you, with Josh Norman playing significant amount of snaps, and Dre Kirkpatrick as well. So the fact that they have that kind of depth is incredible, and to see it play out in camp the way that it has really just confirms that this defense is primed for, again, a pretty legendary season. I would argue that as it currently stands, this defense is likely better than that 2019 defense, which was really, really, really good. So I'm excited. I'm very excited.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they were one of the best defenses in the league second half of last year with Norman and Kirkpatrick. So, I mean, to think we're up there, you know what I mean?
Right.
All right, Brian. So I was going to ask you what a realistic win total is for you this year, but you know what? Let's go through the schedule, man. Let's see what we think right now. All right. So I'm going to read it off. Totally putting you on the spot because we have not talked about this. So
let's
just kind of see what we got here. So week one against the Bears. Win or loss?
Win.
Me too. All right. I think they're going to win that game. Week two, Seattle.
That's the home opener, right? Yeah. That one is going to be interesting just to see if Jimmy G is on the Seahawks. But I think regardless of who is quarterback, whether it's Jimmy G, whether it's Geno Smith, or whether it's Drew Lock, I think that's a win.
I do too. And I think, look, the Seahawks are a mental thing. This is a game you got to win, and I think that they will. Seahawks are going to kind of be garbage this year. At the Broncos in week three, Russell Wilson, the nemesis. Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. That one's tough just because I don't know what that Broncos defense is going to look like without Fangio. I don't know if they're a lot of the same players and the guy that they brought over from the Rams, you know, is running a similar system, right? He's coming from that Brandon Staley system. And again, what does that Broncos offense look like with Russell Wilson? But because it's in Denver, right? Is that in Denver or is it
in Denver? Yep.
In Denver. I'm going to call that a loss.
Yeah, I got that as a loss too. I mean, let's be honest, Russell Wilson owns them, and that's a tough game on the road. That's a primetime game. It's a Sunday night game. I got that as a loss too. All right, week four, home against the Rams.
That's a Monday night football game, right?
That is a Monday night football game.
Yeah. If I'm going to give them a loss in Denver, I'm going to give them a win against the Rams. I think they're going to shock the world on Monday night football.
I always look at the Rams, and I'll probably split with the Cardinals too. You're going to split. I feel like they're going to split. That's kind of how I look at that. So I'll give the home a win. So you already know what I'm going to say for the Rams for a way, but I'm going to give them a win there too.
Okay.
Week five at Carolina.
Win.
Yeah. This is a kind of easy. All right, I'm not saying anything. I want to think of it. Week six at Atlanta.
Win.
Agree. Imagine them 5-1 out the gate. Even 4-2, that's a good stat. I would take that.
It is. And it reminds me a lot of that 2019 season, right? Where they came out the gate 8-0. Yeah. And if you, I tweeted it out, you look at Jimmy Garoppolo's stats, not terribly impressive, but the defense and the running game really carried the day while he got his feet under him after recovering from that knee injury. And then, you know, in the second half, he played significantly better, and obviously they ended up in the Super Bowl. But yeah, it's a lot of parallels to me.
All right, speaking of that Super Bowl, week seven, home at the Chiefs, home against the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm gonna call that a loss.
Yeah, I probably am too. This is where it gets a little tough. All right, week eight at the Rams.
I'm gonna call it a win, right? How many times has the Rams beat Kyle Shanahan?
All right, I got to call it a loss because I'm going to split it. They're going to split to me, so I got to do a loss there. Now, all of a sudden, I'm getting nervous. It's getting harder. Now you got the bye, okay, but you come off the bye, and you have a Sunday night game against the Chargers, the loaded Chargers team.
Yeah, that one's tough for me. Again, coming off the bye, the nice thing about the schedule, you know, when I looked at it fairly recently, was that there aren't really any stretches where it's like three tough games in a row, right? Because there's that bye in there, right? So it's Kansas City, LA, bye, Chargers, and then we'll get to the next game. But I'm gonna say they win that game just because, again, they're coming off their bye. I think the offense will really have gelled by that point. And again, I think that defense is gonna be incredibly good.
Oh man. I don't know here. I'll say because it's coming off a bye, and I'll be a homer and I'll give them a win. All right. That's tough, man. That's a tough stretch. All right. Week 11 at Arizona.
But it's not at Arizona. It's in Mexico.
Mexico.
Yeah. I'm gonna call that a win. I don't believe in the Cardinals. I don't believe in Kyler Murray. I absolutely don't believe in Cliff Kingsbury. Again, that's a game at elevation. and you know they'll have experience with that Denver game. Again, I don't believe in the Cardinals.
All right, I think I'm going to give them a win there too. Now, week 12 feels like, after you have two big wins against the Chargers and the Cardinals, mm-hmm. it feels like a letdown game to me a little bit. You're playing the Saints at home.
Yeah.
Really good defense. Do I trust Jameis Winston? No. This is a game that if they're coming in, you got him at 8-2. I got him at 7-3. This is a game that I'm nervous going into.
Mm-hmm. The problem is we don't really know a lot about the Saints on offense, right? Mm-hmm. Just because Pete Carmichael is there and he's been there, but he hasn't called plays. You know, it's always been Sean Payton who's called the plays. So, you know, does he have the same kind of feel for play calling that Sean Payton does? I doubt it, right? Otherwise, he'd be somewhere already. Doesn't mean that he can't or won't. And then again, you know, that defense, like you said, is good. You know, I think the 49ers defense is better. I think that's just going to be a low scoring game. But like you said, a letdown game. Coming back from Mexico. I would call that a loss just because, again, I think it's a letdown or a trap game, if you will.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give him a win there. I don't feel good about it. I'm going to give him a win. Dolphins week 13.
Oh man. I will give that. I'll call that a win.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I think
again, I don't know what the Dolphins defense has been good for the past 2 years because Brian Flores is a tremendous defensive coordinator. No idea what that defense is going to look like without him. And, you know, again, Mike McDaniel has been with Kyle Shanahan every step of the way. Every stop has had Mike McDaniel, but he's never called plays.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the Niners are going to be, I feel like that's a game they're going to win. And that's a home game too. Yeah, so I feel good about that.
Yeah.
Bucks going across the country, or I'm sorry, Dolphins going across the country. I feel good about that game. Yeah. Week 14, Bucks, this is a loss for me. Yeah. I got only 3 losses so far. It's a loss for me.
That's in Tampa Bay, right?
It is at Levi's.
Oh, it's home? Okay.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know what that offensive line is going to look like for the Bucks. What's the best way to get to Tom Brady? It's with interior pressure. You've got Eric Armstead. You've got Javon Kinlaw. You know, you've got the guys to get that interior pressure. Again, don't know what that line's going to look like. I will give it a loss because you know it's Tom Brady.
All right, week 15, you're at Seattle.
Win.
Yeah, I just think Seattle's going to be garbage this year.
I think they're they're going to be hot garbage.
And the Niners, it's just about time, right? It's just about time they kind of flip the switch with that.
For sure.
All right, week 16 versus the Commanders at home.
Win.
All day, baby. WWW. At the Raiders. Week 17. We both got him 11-4.
It'll be interesting to see where the Raiders are at that point. Are they
imploding because Josh McDaniels is their head coach?
That's the thing. Which I just don't know.
Right.
But also you're in a division with the Chargers and the Broncos and the Chiefs.
Yeah, that's
like, are they even playing for a playoff spot at that point? I don't know. And again, are the 49ers at that point, you know, what do the Rams look like? Are the 49ers competing for anything? I can't bring myself to think that the 49ers are going to lose to the Raiders. So I'm going to make that a win.
All right. I think I am too. But the last game against the Cardinals, I'm going to give them a split here. It's real hard to get 5-1 in the division. I think 4-2 is reasonable. So I'll give them a split. I'm going to give them their 5th loss. So I have them at 12-5 this year, Brian.
Yeah. And I felt like 10 was the floor with this team, just the way that it's constructed, the way that the defense is going to carry this team. Doesn't mean that the offense won't find its footing and won't look good. But it doesn't need to, especially right out of the gate, because again, they can be carried by that defense. So 10 has always felt like the floor to me, because again, I don't think it takes a lot from Trey Lance to get to 10 wins. And if you get more from Trey Lance than anticipated, then you start looking at racking more and more wins. And so, you know, I think between 10 and 13 wins is fair. So, you know, 12 and 5, 13 and 4, right? I'm not looking at 14 and 3, 15 right. and 2, right? Like we're still talking about, you know, they've got some tough games on that schedule. They're playing the Bucks, they're playing the Chiefs, they're playing the Chargers, right? They're playing the Broncos, right? That AFC West gauntlet that they have to play. But outside of that AFC West gauntlet, you know, again, it's the AFC West and the NFC South, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Panthers, the Falcons, the Saints, and the Bucks, right? So again, you're looking at 3, 4, 5 really difficult games out of the 17. The rest of them, I'm not all that worried about. You know, the division games are going to be tough. I'm not worried about the Seahawks. I think the Seahawks are going to be god awful this year. You know, the Rams, I don't know. A lot of people are hyping them up. Apparently Allen Robinson is going to be a revelation in that offense. We'll see. But they lost their, you know, they lost their left tackle. They lost their, excuse me, they lost their center. They lost Von Miller. They lost their starting corner opposite of Jalen Ramsey. There's questions on that team. And so I don't think it's just a foregone conclusion that they're going to steamroll the division or the NFC. And then again, like I said, I don't believe in the Cardinals. I don't believe in Cliff Kingsbury. I don't necessarily believe in Kyler Murray. So it does seem set up for them to have a run and to, you know, possibly look at, you know, at least one home game, in the playoffs. I'm not going to predict the playoffs, right? We just went through the schedule. We gave them a pretty nice record. I'm not going to be on record saying like, if they don't make the playoffs, that is a loss for me. My biggest concern for this season is the progression of Trey Lance and the development of Trey Lance. And as long as that is there, then that is great for me. And everything else is gravy.
See, I'm going to disagree with you there. I think it is a huge loss if they don't make the playoffs this year. And I think the reason for that is the window's open now. And you've been winning, getting to the playoffs with a healthy, you know, when Garoppolo's been in there, pretty mediocre quarterback play. I mean, he didn't do much last year. So all Lance had to do, like you said, is just don't blow it up, man. Just take care of the ball, run the ball, make a few big throws. You know, the defense is going to play well. If they didn't make the playoffs this year, it's 4 out of 6 years not making the playoffs with Kyle Shanahan.
It's true. That's true.
I love Kyle. I've always been a Kyle guy, but he has to start getting in the playoffs consistently. And I loved what they did in 2020. They won 6-10. They didn't have their starting quarterback. They didn't have Nick Bosa, who's one of the best defensive players in the league. Debo was out a lot of the year. Kittle was out a lot of the year. They had nothing. And they were 3 or 4 bonehead Nick Mullins throws away from being 97 and getting in. Seriously.
That's true.
He did that bit of a job. So I think he's got to get in this year. If they don't, if they go 10-7 and they didn't get in, you're like, all right, it was a fluky year. You know, it's real hard to get 10 wins and not get in, especially with the extra wild card. But if something like that happens,
and the NFC is weak.
Right. Oh, okay. But if they're like 7 and whatever it'd be, 10 or 8 and 9 and they don't get in, to me, that is a wasted year. And then next year, again, we got to say next year's a must because now you're talking 4 out of 6 not in the playoffs. They have to start back-to-back playoff years and start to build. But if I'm in the Super Bowl this year, they got to get in. They still have to.
Yeah. And if you look at Kyle, and again, the whole argument, right? Like, why are they getting rid of Jimmy Garoppolo? Look at Kyle Shanahan's record with Jimmy Garoppolo. Look at his record without Jimmy Garoppolo. We've talked about that before, right? What does Jimmy Garoppolo provide? He provides a baseline of competent NFL starting quarterback play, right? Mm-hmm. The definition of average is Jimmy Garoppolo to me. You know, he's elite on third down. But part of the issue is, you know, he also is the reason why they are in third down sometimes, right? So, you know, he does have some elite traits, right? The quickest release I've seen in a long time, and you know, and he's nails on third down, right? Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you look at it and you go, all right, Jimmy Garoppolo provides average quarterback play. There have been two seasons that he has played more than six games as a 49er, and that was 2019 and 2021. And in 2019, they went to the Super Bowl, and in 2021, they made it to the NFC Championship game. So the 2 years that Kyle Shanahan has received average quarterback play for more than six games in a season, he's led his team to the Super Bowl and the NFC Championship game. Mm-hmm. Like you said, there's only so far that excuses can go, right? And losing your quarterback is a big excuse. Like you can't
100%.
You can't deny that. And to say that, you know, well, he was playing with Nick Mullins and CJ Beathard, and people go, well, that's just excuses. Well, it's not, right? Those aren't NFL quarterbacks. They're not NFL starting quarterbacks. Like maybe they can win you a game or two if your guy goes down for a game or two, or can come in and help out in a game where he goes down the first quarter, whatever, right? That's what they're there for. They're not there to start four, five, six games and win for you. Right. If you can get one or two, then you're good, right? So, you know, again, this narrative that Kyle Shanahan can't win without Jimmy Garoppolo, that's nonsense to me. What he can't win with is garbage quarterback play, and most coaches can't.
Most people can't.
So right. What are you going to do there? So the only reason I say if they don't make the playoffs, it's a loss to me. Cause in my mind, if they don't make the playoffs, it's likely because there were some devastating or catastrophic injuries.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily mean to Trey, but some injuries that deplete, you know, the defense or whatever, or the offensive line, whatever the case may be. Right. So that to me is the only way that they don't make the playoffs, simply because, again, I think the floor is 10 wins, and 10 wins is going to make the playoffs in the NFC because the NFC is weak this year.
All right, Bryce, so we got through a whole show in Jimmy Garoppolo was not a topic once. This is fantastic. This is great. We mentioned him, but he won a topic. Yeah. So you know what? This has been a win for me. This is a win for me.
It's a victory.
All right, man. You got anything else?
No. I obviously, with Debo signed, the last thing that we're looking for, and you talked about it, is the end to this saga of where is Garoppolo gonna go. You know, yeah. I will say, the arbitrator came out and gave Deshaun Watson six games, which I think is a travesty. Mm-hmm. She also worded it to basically say like, hey, like based on your own rules, I can't give him more than this. Basically, like you need to fix your rules because,
right.
You know, this is there's no reason why it shouldn't be more. But I'm tied to what essentially is in your. In your language that you have put together. But because it is only six games, I think there's really zero chance that Cleveland looks at bringing Garoppolo in. And so we're really at a point where there's just not a lot of options available by trade. Apparently there's been rumors that possibly the Giants might look at him. Sure. Like, okay. But I also think that they have like $6 million in cap space. So he's going to have to take quite the pay cut. To me, it seems like more and more it's looking like a release is going to be the end result. Now, when that happens, who knows? You know, are they going to do him a solid and do it early enough for him to catch on somewhere? I think they are. I don't want to say worried, but I do think that if they can keep him out of Seattle, at least for as long as possible, that would probably be a preference of theirs. But yeah, I am. I'm excited for the end of that saga because that really kind of ties up all the loose ends for this offseason. And then it really is just all about looking at next offseason or at the season. And excited for those joint practices with the Vikings, which come in 2 weeks. And like I said, you know, Trey's performance in practice. Again, if I see that he's 5 of 10, 6 of 11, whatever, I don't feel like the sky is falling.
Yeah, it's a fun time of year, though, man. Can't wait for the season to get here, but it's fun talking about it on its way.
It is. So, it is.
All right, thanks, everybody, again, for joining us. For Brian, this is Al. We'll see you.
Later.